Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry.
Hello, and welcome back to Whence Came You. This is episode number 276, and I'm your host, Brother Adam Thayer. This week's episode is brought to you by MasonicRevival.com. We have some great papers lined up this week, so without further ado, let's get right into our first paper. The New Year is Coming, Harpocrates, by Midnight Freemason contributor Robert Johnson. The new year is around the corner, and with that comes renewal. Renewal of things both old and maybe not so old. Another beginning. As humans, we see the world in time in an odd way. We see things linearly. That is, we need a beginning, a middle, and an end. From the death springs new life. Life is, after all, an amazing cycle. Although you may think at this point in the piece, I'm going to tell you to renew your Masonic something rather for the new year, rest easy. I'm not going to do that. But I will regale you with the tale of Harpocrates, or as he may have been known to ancient Egyptians, Harpicrati. He was a godlike child figure, often depicted in the nude and sitting on a lotus flower. He is considered in the Egyptian culture as most likely representing a renewal and new year because of a yearly consecration of peach blossoms which were given to his busts and carvings. Also, because he was the representation of Horus as a godchild, Horus representing the newborn sun at each new day. Masonically, there is a cooler connection, which is that of secrecy. Typically in his depictions, Harpocrates was shown with his finger pressed to his lips, as if somehow telling us to keep a secret. So when the Romans conquered Egypt and adopted this god, they gave him the name we have today, Harpocrates, or Hirupakherod, which means Horus the child. At some point, they lose the idea of renewal and focus on the outward appearance and subtly associated with him, representing secrecy, something all Freemasons value. So remember to keep the secrets, dear brothers. Alright, up next we have just a short little poem for you, which was posted on the My Freemasonry Facebook page. It is the time of year when the brethren rejoice, and sing carols of praise in resounding voice. Days of merriment and long nights of cheer, as we all await the happy new year. It is a time of family and lifelong friends, a time of happiness and to make amends. Roast turkey and baubles in the nutcracker sweet, we each have our own way to make Christmas complete. As we stroll through this happy month of December, find time to pause and take time to remember that distinguishing sign of a Freemason's heart, those acts of charity, how great they are. As your family gathers round your Christmas tree and the children play with giggles of glee, spare a thought for the poor, the man with no shoes, whose daily meal is less than your dues. Remember also the Grand Lodge above and the Supreme Great Architect's act of love, and practice those virtues we hold so true. Have some fun, but let temperance chasten you. And during this season of peace and joy, look well to our future, the girl and boy. Then wonder what lessons you may them teach, and with your guidance what heights they may reach. So to all of my brethren from far and wide, whether your Christmas be snow or hot and dry, may the architect grant his celestial boon and keep your good health till we meet again soon. Take care of yourself and those you find dear. Keep this festive spirit throughout the next year. Look toward your next date with our happy band. Till our next merry meeting, apron, heart, and hand.
Geometry, the first and noblest of sciences, is the basis on which the superstructure of Freemasonry is erected. By geometry, we may curiously trace nature through her various windings to her most concealed recesses. By it, we discover the wisdom, power, and goodness of the grand architect of the universe and view with delight the proportions which connect this vast machine. By it, we discover how the planets move in their respective orbits and demonstrate their various revolutions. I recall sitting in a science class in high school. Our teacher, Mr. Moore, dropped a chunk of sodium into a beaker of water. The sodium instantly fizzed up and zooped around the beaker like an out-of-control powerboat. Then, it burst into flames and finally exploded as the students oohed and aahed. When the rumbling subsided, the diabolical Mr. Moore called on an unfortunate student. "Henry, what made it do that?" Henry beamed. "God." The class thought it was funny. Mr. Moore, who had the sense of humor of a wounded gorilla, didn't. In his own gruff and unsympathetic way, He explained that just because we don't understand something doesn't mean it's a direct result of God's action. True, but in fact, the Masonic ritual teaches there is a relationship between God and the physical universe. From that relationship, as we learn in the second degree lecture, we can not only observe the magnificence of the Creator, but also draw moral symbolism from metaphors we see in His physical creation. God and science are not at war. They can't be. Think about that. They can't be. It is we humans who don't have all the answers when it comes to understanding either God or science, who somehow perceive there is a war. As Henry discovered, it's a slippery slope to take something we don't understand, stop research, and conclude it's God's work. In that event, what happens when we discover the scientific principle behind it? Historically, many have taken the stance that the research is wrong in the face of overwhelming evidence that it is, in fact, right. In the 17th century, for example, humans did not understand the solar system. It was taken as scientific and religious fact that the sun circled the earth. Psalm 104 tells us, "He set the earth on its foundations. It can never be moved." When scientists proved the Earth, in fact, did orbit the Sun, rather than being inconsistent with God's design, it revealed it. The Church, however, still didn't warm up to the concept right away. Today, scientists and virtually all religious establishments know it to be an incontrovertible fact. Today's hot buttons include evolution, the Big Bang Theory, and a few more points of contention. Regardless of your point of view on these issues, the facts for each are overwhelming. And with some religious groups challenging scientific evidence, we are, on some level, back in the 17th century. Scientific discoveries are not political, not vindictive, and not anti-God. They are based on facts. Not, by the way, just on observation. Any idiot can observe daily that the sun circles the earth. These discoveries don't offer proof of God one way or the other. They prove we have learned more about God's universe and, as we are admonished, should view with delight all such revelations. What these scientific discoveries do prove is that God is bigger and more complex than we can ever comprehend. So complex, in fact, that when asked to prove God exists, famed theologian and Freemason Peter Marshall responded, "How could my tiny mind prove God?" The Reverend Marshall went further. He turned the tables and asked his questioners to prove they existed. Fact is, he was on to something. Any legitimate, credible scientist today will tell you your body is nothing but energy. Your house, everything inside it, the trees outside, the very ground you walk on is nothing but energy. This is not some kind of New Age folderol. It's scientific fact. Sounds kind of spiritual, doesn't it? Or, as Dr. Wayne Dyer put it, you are not a body with a soul. You are a soul with a body. If what you personally believe about God seems inconsistent with scientific fact, consider this. Scientists have already observed the world of relativity and the quantum world appear completely incompatible. Yet, they coexist. Can't God coexist along with them, even with perceived inconsistencies? And don't we know on some level all those inconsistencies have to iron themselves out, even if that process is beyond our human capability to figure out? So many concepts still baffle our best scientists. Dark matter and dark energy, the nature of time and matter inside black holes, known as the singularity, a unified theory, the possibility of parallel universes, backwards time travel, dimensions beyond three or four if you count time, quantum entanglement, a phenomenon so strange and baffling that Einstein called it spooky. To each of these, the best scientific minds around would say, we just don't completely understand. Or perhaps, more accurately, we just don't have all the facts. Many, even some scientists, think there may be spiritual elements to these mysteries. The scientists, however, will not draw conclusions without proven facts. Pesky hindrances that some outside the scientific community have the luxury of ignoring. In our lifetimes, we will most likely solve some of these mysteries. To many, those discoveries will not just reveal scientific facts. They will also give us greater insight into the wisdom, power, and goodness of the grand architect of the universe. And I, for one, finding far more spirituality in science than science in spirituality, anticipate each new discovery with delight. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Right up next, I have a very serious question to put to you all. I would like to raise it with you and then do some detective work, examining the evidence that might lead us to answering it. It is a most important question that I am sure you have often asked yourself, and relates our craft to the wider society in which we live, and concerns several major issues of the season. This very serious question is Father Christmas a Freemason? Let us consider the facts of the case. Of whom does this remind you? A worthy gentleman who is, we must admit, getting on a bit in years and is perhaps a little overweight, who wears a very distinctive costume as the badge of his activities, who provides the opportunity for friends and visitors to meet in fellowship, who is surrounded by secrecy and mystery, dispenses goodwill and the charity of gifts all over the world, avoiding ostentatious public display while doing so, and is there doing it year after year. Well, fellow detective, you must admit that this description could fit either Santa or a Freemason, but this is merely circumstantial evidence. We need some proof. Let us start with his movements on the evening in question. All the reports have him coming from the North Pole, as the sun rises in the east to open and enliven the day, and with him needing to finish the world before dawn, then he would have to begin in the east and move towards the west. Therefore, Father Christmas must begin his journey at the northeast corner of the world. This, of course, is exactly what we do with an entered apprentice. Similarly, you would assume he would finish heading for home, which would place him in the northwest corner at the end of his work, to give his salute to the world and leave. Convincing proof, you must agree. But think, too, he undertakes this great journey to provide the gifts but once a year, and I am sure that any brother treasurer will agree that this is exactly the frequency with which most brethren provide the gift of their charity to the lodge. And the secrecy, the mystery? Those of you who are parents remember. What was the worst crime that an older child could commit at this time of the year? To tell the younger ones the secret of Santa, to break the faith that they should have kept. And I am sure your punishment of them pointed out that they were void of all moral worth and totally unfit to be received into the dinner table, but be sent to their room for destroying something that was good, so worthwhile and so innocent. Surely, all this evidence shows us beyond doubt that Father Christmas is a Freemason. He practices brotherly love and relief. We are happy to meet him in the Christmas season and sorry to part. All the details, his wearing of a uniform, the rituals that happen year in, year out, the fact he is a male. On a more serious note, brethren, the way the whole Christmas season has developed and is practiced does have many things in common with Freemasonry, and we can learn much about each from the other. For instance, where did the figure we call Father Christmas come from originally? What is his background? Father Christmas, or Santa Claus, or Saint Nicholas, has elements of pre-Christian myths and legends, which developed through the Middle Ages by being built into the great Christian story of God's wonderful gift to the world. By the 18th and 19th century, these details were formalized into the character that we still have today. His stylized uniform, his way of working, his ritual activities and sayings. This all sounds very Masonic. The pre-Christian legends of Solomon's Temple, the pyramids, Pythagoras, and so on were developed through the Middle Ages by the great Christian cathedral builders, then formalized in the 18th and 19th centuries into the uniform, the work, the rituals that we use today. St. Nicholas was actually a 4th century Turkish bishop who had originally been a rich nobleman. One of the stories about him was that he had helped a poor man who could not afford to pay for weddings for his 3 daughters. St. Nicholas climbed onto the roof and threw a handful of gold coins down the chimney, and these coins fell into the girls' stockings that had been hung up by the fire to dry. These girls were then able to marry well and live happily ever after. He has been considered the patron saint of poor children ever since. The legend became very popular in Europe, especially the Netherlands, where it was mixed with elements from the pagan Yule or midwinter festivals. St. Nick became Santa Claus, who would arrive on December 6th, St. Nicholas Day, mounted on a white horse and visit children to inquire about their behavior the previous year. Good children would be rewarded and bad ones punished. The night before, children would leave a pair of the shoes or clogs out, filled with hay and carrots for the horse. In the morning, these would be found filled with sweets or small presents. These traditions were taken to America by Dutch settlers, but it was the famous poem by Professor Clement Clark Moore which begins, "'Twas the night before Christmas and all through the house," which settled most of the details into the Santa figure we know today. Many of these details, such as the reindeer and their names, the flying sled coming down the chimney, were first brought together in this poem, but Professor Moore took them from old traditions from as far afield as Finland and Siberia, and they've stuck and become a single story. You can see how similar this is to the creation of our ritual and ceremonies. While these also certainly include many elements that are ancient folklore, they were put together quite deliberately by identifiable people with a specific aim to create an impression in the minds of the brethren taking part. Like the Santa legend, the details may be fictional, they may come from many different sources, and they may even be inconsistent with each other. That does not matter. It is the impression that all of them create as an entirety that is important. Would you deny all the good that the Santa story achieves, all the happiness it creates, just because it is a story? Of course not. And this is the real linking of Father Christmas and Freemasonry. Why do we have Christmas? And why do we have Father Christmas? We celebrate religious beliefs about the birth of goodness and hope for the future. We reaffirm the belief that people are basically good and can develop into loving, caring, helpful, supporting friends to each other. We look to a new year where things can be better. We do this at this season, whether we are celebrating the Christian Nativity or the Jewish Hanukkah with its lights and gifts and stories of peace, or the Hindu Diwali with its festival of lights and gifts of sweets and toys. Or even if we hold no formal religion, except the pleasure of seeing a child's face transfixed with wonder and delight. And why are we Freemasons? Because we believe that there are important things like goodness and hope for the future, and that men can develop into loving, caring, helpful, supporting brethren to their families and each other. We not only look to a future where things can be better, but we see it as our role, as free and accepted or symbolic Masons, to help build that future. So I feel I can safely say that Father Christmas is a Freemason. Not only does he show so many of the signs and tokens of being one, but he brings us a message that we, as Freemasons, can heed for the whole year. Peace on earth, goodwill towards men. David Downey, St. Trinian's Lodge, number 2050. All right, I hope you enjoyed those pieces. To close out this evening, I'm going to read you the Tyler's Toast from the Nebraska Table Lodge ritual. Then to our final toast tonight, our glasses freely drained. Happy to meet, sorry to part, happy to meet again. The Mason social brotherhood around the festive board reveals a truth more precious far than the miser's hoard. We freely share the bounteous gifts that generous hearts contain. Happy to meet, sorry to part, happy to meet again. We meet as Masons, free and true, and when our work is done, the merry song and social glass is not unduly won. And only at our farewell pledge is pleasure mixed with pain. Happy to meet, sorry to part, happy to meet again. Amidst our mirth we drink, to all poor Masons o'er the earth. On every shore our flag of love is gloriously unfurled. We prize each brother, fair and dark, who bears no moral stain. Happy to meet, sorry to part, happy to meet again. We Masons prize that noble truth the Scottish peasant told, that rank is but a guinea stamp, the man himself the gold. We meet the rich and poor alike, the equal right maintain. Happy to meet, sorry to part, happy to meet again. Dear brethren of the mystic tie, the night is waning fast. Our work is done, our feast is o'er. This toast must be our last. Good night to all, once more good night. again, that farewell strain. Happy to meet, sorry to part. Happy to meet again. For all of the crew of the Whence Came You podcast, we wish you the happiest of holidays and a fruitful new year.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Be sure to join us for our next edition.